Hello and welcome to Nikon Report, your weekly roundup of all the latest Nikon news and all other photographic announcements that we found interesting. The main story of the week is we hit 20K on this thing called YouTube. Whoop whoop!
Yay! Thank you so much for all of you who have subscribed. If you haven't subscribed yet and you enjoy our content, please give us a subscribe so we can hit that 100K and I can get the silver play button.
Absolutely. I can retire after this as well. So thanks to you. Thank you very much, guys. We really, really appreciate it. Now, on to the news. So first one up, we have a Nikon Z6, Z7, Mach 1 and Mach 2 firmware updates.
Yeah, so Z6 to Z7 two firmware updates first. This is version 1.60.
Mm-hmm.
So their firmware has changed from version 1.50 to 1.60, and they have made the following additions to the custom setting menu. They have added always and only when flash is not used for custom setting D9 apply settings to live view.
This is actually very good.
Yes, it is.
You know why? Because some people shoot outdoors and then they come back and shoot some in studio light.
Mm-hmm.
And because their setting is effect straight away, you have to go to live view and you have to switch it off and then switch it on again, depending on what you're shooting. So to have the setting there is actually quite good. So you don't have to go through all this mental gymnastics of going to the menu and changing it.
Very true. So they've also added D10, warm display colors.
Can you feel the warmth?
I can feel the warmth, which means that if you are shooting, for example, at nighttime or doing astrophotography, then you get that sort of dark look. I think that's the word I'm looking for.
The gothic.
You get this goth version of your display, which is very useful because you don't have to adjust your eyes looking at the back screen versus then looking at your dark scene.
What I really like that they've added the image frame to D11 function. It just creates a little gray frame on the edges of the viewfinder or LCD, which is quite nice. I mean, it's not a deal breaker, but I think it's a nice cosmetic change.
It is, and it also means that if you are shooting in a situation where the screen is very dark or blank, you can actually see what's the screen and what's not the screen. As you say, it's cosmetic. It's not actually something that you would use in photography, but interesting. They've also added G7, which is a red record frame indicator, which means when you are recording video, there is a small red frame around the border of your screen. Now that's useful because more often than not, you'll start filming, there might be a bit of a delay for the camera to kick in actually filming, and then you don't know if you're recording or not, and you end up not recording.
Yeah. What you can do is you press a second time because you thought there's no recording, and you actually stop it.
Yeah.
And this is just a better visual confirmation. So it's similar to what we have now on Z9 and Z8 camera. So I'm glad they're bringing it back to camera like Z6 and Z7 Mark IIs.
Agreed. Now, they've also added finder display size, photo live view in the setup menu. Mm. They've added prioritized viewfinder mode. They've actually changed it. So you've got prioritized viewfinder 1 and prioritized viewfinder 2. Presumably, there are slight differences between those. And they've fixed some issues as well. So there's a couple of bugs, I suppose, which came up, which Nikon have fixed. A drop in brightness sometimes occurred in parts of photographs taken using flash. Bit of an odd one. In some cases, the OK button could not be used to interrupt the interval timer or focus shift photography when the viewfinder was used. Focus could still be adjusted using the focus ring even when disable was set for manual focus ring. In the custom setting menu, if an option other than non-linear was chosen for focus ring rotation range. Very specific.
Yeah, and that's actually the non-linear rotation or linear rotation been added actually fairly recently in the last, let's say, 7 to 8 months or
mm-hmm,
so.
Yeah.
So, which is quite good. And obviously, the elephant in the room is the absence of the autofocus improvement. Now, the conversation that the internet has right now is, are we going to see any autofocus improvements in the Generation 2 cameras like Z6 and the 7, or are we done with this? What are your thoughts?
I think that at this point, we probably won't see autofocus improvements. I think that the Z6 II and Z7 II were already at a certain level when they were announced that was far advanced over their first generation of cameras. And arguably, they're about as good as they're going to get. I don't know if Nikon can add anything in firmware to improve them. And to be honest, that's a debate not to be had with us, but to be had with Nikon themselves, because we don't know if they can make any further improvements.
One of the interesting points that people bring up is saying that, well, why is Z6 and Z7 sees autofocus improvements and the Generation 2 cameras don't? And Matt Irvin, actually, in his video discussing the film where said quite clearly the Generation One was the first mirrorless cameras from Nikon. So they had much longer distance for improvement. Mm-hmm. And therefore Nikon is still improving them. And we're going to talk about the new firmware for those cameras next. So when Z6 II and Z7 II came out, they were already quite refined. And all that distance that Generation 1 cameras went already been included in Generation 2.
Right.
So I think there's a very easy misconception about the second processor where people said, well, there's so much potential there that the tap can be still open. But it seems to me that since we haven't seen the Autofocus firmware update, and that rumor has been started 2 years ago now, by infamous website, starts like Nikon Report, but called something else. And it seems like it never panned out. They did obviously some behind the scenes improvements and autofocus on those cameras is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, I think my main complaint about those firmware updates is that it didn't make my Z6 II and Z7 Mark II cameras and Nikon Z8 or Z9 in terms of autofocus speed. And it seems to me that Nikon is not going to do that. And we can either be upset or we can just move on with our lives.
Go take some pictures.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of Z6 and Z7 firmware updates, we do have a small one. This is update version 3.60, and they have added support for the MCN10 remote grip. So if you are a user of the MCN10, if you are a videographer, then this update is worth doing for your Z6 or Z7.
Now, I have a question for our viewership. Have any of you bought one of those? And if you bought one, could you tell us how good is it or not? Because this is not our range of expertise. Let's say we are not videographers while we shoot those little videos on our YouTube channel.
Despite shooting 3 videos a week, we are not videographers.
Exactly. We don't use those big videographers' tools. It's just interesting to see the feedback from videographers who use that, how useful it is. Let us know in the comments below.
Now moving on to some rumors. Nikon rumors themselves have said that the Nikkor Z35 f1.2 S-line lens is to be announced in August/September.
Okay, so no more information. They just say that they got the tip. It's happening. It seems to us that the next round of announcement is scheduled probably for some time of end of August, beginning of September. We'll see, of course. But yeah, it seems like 35 1.2 is next in line. And obviously there's another lens that's left on that roadmap that has been announced yet. There's 135 f1.8 lens as well.
We're obviously speculating on the aperture because there isn't any official information out there. Nikon rumors seem to be very confident that it's the 35 1.2, but there is nothing to suggest that it definitely is. So if we're wrong, then please don't blame us.
Absolutely. I mean, Nikon rumors were very confident about Z6 Mark II and Z7 Mark II autofocus firmware updates as well. So you never know. So take it with a massive bucket of salt. Now, speaking of more wild rumors. The chap called How to Fly, who has quite sporty track record in his predictions of what things are going to come first, but he was actually recently very right about the Z9 version 4 firmware update. He has a wild rumor. He thinks that Tamron is going to announce a 35-150 f2 to 2.8 Nikon Z mount lens about next week or so. So very interesting because we haven't heard anything like this. This lens is currently exists in Sony E mount and costs about $1,900 in the United States.
Not a cheap lens.
Yeah, but it's chunky. It's variable aperture. I mean, variable aperture, but it's f2 2.8, so it's nice, actually. It's a big lens. I mean, it's quite heavy. It's almost 1,200 grams. It was released in October 2021 for Sony E-mount, so it seems like it's coming to Nikon Z-mount, and Tamron is scheduled to announce their financial results on 8th of August, so who knows, maybe they'll announce it at the same time. What do you think?
I think that this could be quite an interesting addition, if it is a real thing. Obviously, we have the 70-300 Tamron lens, which was officially licensed by Nikon, and has proven to be pretty successful, you know, apart from a couple of little odds and ends, which we would have potentially hoped for improvement. Ultimately, it's been very popular as a non 2.8 line go everywhere lens. So this 35-150 is one that I find quite interesting. So my only question is, I don't understand what all the little buttons and things do on this, but how much will it talk to Nikon cameras without them having to do a firmware update? Will we need a firmware update when this lens comes out, if it does come out? There's a few things which I think are not quite sort of squared away there, but it is an interesting lens for sure.
That's true, but knowing that Nikon and Tamron are now in cahoots and the lens will come out with a blessing from Nikon, mm-hmm. then I am pretty sure that with USB port that's going to be installed in that lens, future firmware updates are quite possible. Now, my question is, if you look at the Nikon lineup of all the lenses that are currently available, so the closest one we have to this is 24-120 f4 mm-hmm. from Nikon. Mm-hmm. And that one is a cheaper lens. So 24-120 f4 is a highly regarded lens. It's very sharp, has fantastic reviews, very good range. Obviously, it goes from 24 instead of 35, yeah. but a bit shorter, ends at 120, and costs about under £1,200. This one, seems to me, will cost about £1,600-1,700, could be plus Nikon tax on top of that.
Right.
But that one goes a little bit longer, but starts at 35 instead of 24. What are your thoughts, Becky, on this? Would you think they would overlap or would you think they'll find its own audience?
Well, also bearing in mind that this is a 2.8 lens. It's a 2 to 2.8. So exactly. The aperture is considerably different to the f4. Looking at the size of it also looks like it's understandably going to be a bit bigger and heavier. We know from the 70-300 experience that the Nikon 70-300 Tamron lens, Nikon mount, I should say, is slightly bigger than the Sony mount 70-300 from Tamron. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that this one might still be a little bit bigger and heavier. So I don't think it would replace out the 24-120 because the 24-120 ultimately is the smallest around, still S-line, sort of compact travel lens. It's smaller and lighter than the 24-70 2.8 whilst not skimping on the optics. So I don't think this one necessarily overlaps it. It does just bring another option to those who are looking for a kind of go everywhere lens. And hopefully it's not so big and heavy that it will be cost and weight prohibitive.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the weight, so if Tamron lens weighs 1,165 grams, then Nikon 24-120 f4 is only 630.
That's right.
So I assume that for travel photographers, 24-120 makes more sense. It goes wider, it's more portable, it's obviously very, very sharp lens. Now, this lens, 35-150, it's f2 to 2.8, so very shallow depth of field. And it seems like it will appeal more to professional photographers on assignment. So maybe wedding photographers, maybe some event photographers, just because you can get the portraits shallow depth of field if you need to. And instead of having, let's say, 24-70 and 70-200 at the same time, you can just get one lens that covers it all. Mm-hmm. Now, because of its weight, it's not exactly a travel lens, but I'm sure that some of you will be happy carrying it around.
I do like the range for sure. I think that this is a little bit more interesting for some people because of that slightly longer end. Not everyone wants to go as wide as 24. So I think it's going to be really interesting if it does turn out to be true, but we don't know yet, obviously.
And as usual, tell us in the comments below, would you buy this lens or do you think 24-120 is the answer? We will definitely read your comments with passion. Now let's move on to Z8 service advisory. We now had some updates from people who will send their cameras for servicing with Nikon, and they gave us feedback on the length of the turnaround of that service. So it seems like that turnaround has increased a little bit. So if you're dropping off your camera in the United States, you're looking at 1-2 days turnaround, which is similar to last week what we reported. Now, if you're shipping your camera to Nikon, then we're looking at 7-14 days turnaround, depending on the area you live. I can say that looking at the comments that we got under our previous podcast, it seems that 10 to 14 days is a normal turnaround in the UK on that servicing as well. Now, in the United States, because they use UPS, there's some caveats that you need to be aware of.
Tom Hogan updated his article on this return for service time blog post that he did. He says, one thing to note, Nikon USA ships via UPS, but does not always use signature required. If you're at an address where a package might be left without anyone to receive it, you should talk to Nikon USA customer service. I believe that they have a procedure for you to pay for signature required. It appears that the Signal Hill office is using the signature required, but not Melville. I've gotten mixed responses on this. Note that Nikon doesn't insure the shipment, even if signature is required. Another thing to keep in mind is that UPS and the Teamsters Union are in contract negotiations that could lead to a strike at the end of July. If a strike does occur, any camera en route via UPS may end up in limbo before it is delivered. So bear that in mind.
Speaking of Z8, apparently the first infrared converter Z8 showed up on the internet. Paul from Paul's Photo, he's done that. He's got a blog post, he's got a video about that. So if you're interested in infrared cameras and want to see some sample images taken with the converted Z8, then definitely go check out the link in the description below.
Cool.
All right, now onto some corp news. Apparently Yahoo Japan published an article about Nikon Japan. So you can only access this article for some reason on Yahoo through VPN. If you're a regular non-VPN user, you go there and Yahoo Japan says, sorry, you're not Japanese, can't show you the article.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? But basically what they say is that actually Nikon increased the salary twice in the last year for the employees.
Very nice.
Can you imagine that?
So in September 2022, Nikon raised the annual salary of its 780 employees with specialized skills and managerial positions by up to 20%. That's a massive increase.
It's not bad.
It also announced that it will employ about twice as many employees. At the same time, the company also announced plans to build an R&D center on the site of the former number one factory in Oimachi, Shinagawa-ku, and to consolidate the advanced research and development functions that are scattered across each factory. Now, in April 2023, they also announced that in July, they would start to increase the average base salary of all employees and raise it by 1% by the looks of things. In addition, Nikon have abolished the upper limit on annual income and introduced a new system in which wages are determined individually according to the ability of those who want to hire, in order to acquire highly skilled human resources.
All right, well, that sounds like fun. So yeah, if you're into Nikon Corp and looking at the stocks and shares, I guess that's going to help you to make a decision on purchasing or selling your shares.
Now, for some third-party news, Zhonghi Optics Apo 200mm f4 macro one-times lens for Nikon Z mount has been officially announced. This excites me. The previously rumored Apo 200mm f4 macro lens for the Z mount is now out there in the world. It has been announced. It is a manual focus full frame lens with a maximum aperture of f4, and the closest focusing distance is 48 centimeters.
9 diaphragm blades, 11 elements in 7 groups, 3D elements, 3 ultra high index lenses, and 1 extra high transmission lenses as well. $499.
And it's 1,230 grams. So that's quite exciting. You can have a look at the sample photos in the link that we're going to include below for you as well. And I must say, if anyone from Zhonghi wants to send me one to try out, I would love to test it out for you.
I mean, there's so many photographs of flowers that can be taken in the world. We haven't reached that limit yet. Now, talking about DxOR, they released 369 new optic modules, including one for 1228 Nikko Z lens. So if you've got one of those and use DxOR software, definitely update them as soon as. Now, on to reviews. Chinese website SheTech published a review of an upcoming Z1H600 lens.
They did. Now, here's their conclusion. It is translated from Google Translate, so please bear with me.
It says,
according to the previous test, although the Z180-600 is a non-S-line series lens, its imaging quality is good. This lens has excellent sharpness, light vignetting, stable and effective VR. If you have to be picky, there is some purple fringing and the blur to them is not soft enough. But they do say overall image quality has reached a high level. Compared to the F-mount 200-500, this new lens has a larger zoom range, stronger imaging quality apparently, and a more high-end internal zoom design, which can be said to be a comprehensive improvement. From the perspective of focal length coverage, it complements the 1728, 2875, 1780, and now 180-600. These three now seamlessly cover an extensive zoom range, and they seem to like it.
These three seem now to become four.
Yeah. Now we also have a video from Matt Irwin, joined by his friend Joe.
And they have a discussion on 180-600 lens versus Z100-400. A lot of people are considering them because some of them already bought one and they're thinking, well, if I add teleconverter, what will happen? Mm-hmm. Will the lens break or actually I can use it? Shall I buy a 180-600 or shall I sell 100-400 to get 180-600? So they had a talk. They've got all the answers. So do check it out. It looks like they went to the same place that we went last time. It looks pretty much identical.
Yeah, it's just the Australian version. It's like winter there now. So for them, it is the equivalent of what we did in the winter.
Can you bird watch crocodiles?
No, you can crocodile watch crocodiles. Anyway, so they have this discussion, which is quite interesting and will hopefully help you make your decision if you're not sure which one to go for. Now, next up, DxOR Mark have put out their sensor test results from the Z8. And, well, they had a conclusion.
Yeah, they gave it 98 and they said that Nikon calls Z8 successor to the D850, and it's not difficult to see why. Although there hasn't been any increase in pixel counts, the 45 megapixels to 47 range seems to be current sweet spot, the Z8 is an immensely versatile and flexible camera. While the speed advantages of a stacked CMOS sensor are clear, image quality is also excellent. Now, they talk about this, but then they show the comparison between, say, Z7 Mark II and Z8, and Z8 is at 98 on image quality, and Z7 is at 100. Now, the good news is that realistically, you probably won't see the difference. And the good news is that it's great that now a lot of camera manufacturers can produce a top quality cameras that basically will be splitting hairs in terms of image quality. If it's 98 or 97 or 100, I think anything over 90 is pretty good in my books.
I would say so. Now, we also have a review of the Z9 with the Nauticam NAZ9 housing by the Underwater Club. So for those of you who don't know, although I'm sure a lot of you do, when you do underwater photography, you do need a very specific housing for your individual camera in order to make sure that you can access all the bits and pieces and that it's fully, fully airtight. So this review was written by Nicholas Remy, who is a well-known underwater photographer. And he said, before I started using the Z9 underwater, I had asked members of the Underwater Club what they were curious to know about it. And I answered all their questions in this review, except one. The last question was whether the Z9 could take shots impossible to capture on a D850 or D500. When time is of the essence, the Z9 shines by letting me work quicker, reference the first four pros on his list, and you can have a full look at those at your leisure, and simply has higher keeper rates than the best DSLRs when it comes to critical focus. I measured 70% keeper rates versus 44% when working in challenging conditions. Yeah. Finally, if you're finding the Z9 appealing but are unsure about the size and weight, consider the newly released Z8, which shares most of the Z9's impressive features in a smaller package. Now, he says personally he'd like to see how it compares for underwater photography. We don't yet, I think, have an underwater housing by Nauticam for that one. Yeah,
but they will come.
But they will.
I think it's a great question to ask yourself if you are on the market to buy a new camera, especially if you're a DSLR user. Can the newly released camera take the pictures you can't take with the camera that you already have? Could be D750, D780, D850, you name it. If it can, then it's a great answer to do that. But if it can't, then you can potentially wait another 3 years and save yourself a lot of money
for sure
upgrading, and I guess save yourself from gas.
And one of the nice things about a review like this is that it's in a specialist field as well, because obviously we know that Z cameras are the future. We know that there are a lot of things that they can do better than DSLRs, but it's those specific use cases which make all the difference. If you're a portrait photographer that just shoots in the studio all day, it's not going to make a difference if you upgrade from your DSLR. If you've got a D850, the Z8 is not going to improve your life particularly. There's a few small features that will be helpful, but the image quality is ultimately going to be pretty similar. Whereas if you're a photographer that does weddings, there may be quite a significant number of improvements in the Z system. So it's nice to have this for underwater photographers as well.
Absolutely. And to add to that is, I think your mileage may vary in terms of upgrade path, because for some people, as you say, you may see a huge advantage of going to mirrorless cameras. Even if you're, let's say, studio guy shooting with D850, for some people, it's not going to be that much. Everyone is different, and you need to decide for yourself, maybe trial those cameras side by side to decide if it's worth upgrade or not. But as we always see with the conversations like this, someone is going to always make a comment saying, my Nikon F still takes great shots.
It does.
And we don't want to go into that. It's more the idea of, yes, if you want to upgrade, is it just because you want to a new shiny thing, or the particular reasons that actually will improve your photography or make it maybe easier and less painful compared to your previous generation camera?
And that is the question you have to ask yourself. But that's all we've got for you this week.
Thanks for watching us.
Yes, thank you very much for watching and or listening. Please give us a like and a subscribe if you're on YouTube. If you're listening on a podcast platform, a follow, a rating, a review, none of that would go amiss, to be honest.
Absolutely. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music, as well as other great podcast platforms. We're also available on social channels like Instagram.
We are, and probably a few others. One day we'll be on others, but at the moment, just Instagram. I'm at Rebecca_Danese. The shop is at Nikon at Grace.
And I'm at Konstantin Kochkin. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.